meltdown. We will need not only to understand these changes and how they are affecting us, but also to be ready to take some remedial actions to deal with the emerging fissures in society. An accounting of these microtrends is then necessary to develop a plan of action to ensure that society's burgeoning forces work to the benefit rather than the detriment of our democracy, our marketplace, and our personal freedom. Section 1. Love and Relationships. 1. Second Fiddle Husbands. 2. Never Married. 3. Open Marriages. 4. Graying Bachelors. 5. Third Time Winners. 6. Having It Both Ways. 7. Internet Marrieds Revisited. 8. Independent Marrieds. 1. Second Fiddle Husbands. The traditional notion of the male breadwinner has been turned upside down, as American women in larger numbers are now bringing home substantial paychecks. While a lot of younger men are treading water, or worse, some women on strong career paths seek out similarly accomplished men, but others are looking for something else, a second fiddle husband. This new kind of husband understands that with someone else holding the economic reins, he will need to take on more of the traditional home and child-rearing responsibilities that were previously carried out by women. Women have always had a lot of power in marital relationships, but that power has not typically flowed from education, career, and money. Now, it increasingly does. Women are more educated than ever before, with women college graduates outnumbering men by a ratio of 60% to 40%. It's predicted that by 2023, females will outnumber male graduates by almost half. Just as many Mad Men-era men preferred less ambitious women, it's to be expected that there are women who now feel the same way. Historically, men were often in a bind. If they were not successful at work, they were not successful at home. As the nature of work has been changing from factory and strength-related jobs to growing numbers of jobs that require a lot of mental work, socialization, and patience, a lot of men have been falling behind. They are the ones who get into car crashes and hazing incidents, have drug overdoses, and wind up in jail. Even the run-of-the-mill guy is just not doing as well in the transition to the information age. Now, a second-fiddle husband can be a flop at work and still be a success at home as a loving, faithful husband. His life will no longer be measured by his salary or work title. For the men who enter a marriage with these new responsibilities and this new outlook, the second-fiddle husband trend can be a godsend, freeing them from a life of work anxiety and failure. Both in the United States and abroad, the number of second-fiddle husband marriages is on the rise. Work hours are increasing for two-worker families, and the increase is being driven almost entirely by women. The number of breadwinning wives is highest among the more educated, and appears connected to the outpacing in education of American women over American men, which creates a smaller dating pool of successful men. Part of the rise of second-fiddle husbands is due to changing attitudes toward parenting and work, and a more egalitarian outlook toward childcare and career. Comfort with the idea of a woman being the primary breadwinner is especially prevalent among millennial men. A Pew Research Center study found the number of stay-at-home dads has doubled since 1989, from 1.1 million to 2.2 million in 2012. Unemployment was a factor in this, including the recession. But there's also a long-term growth pattern for men as primary caregivers. In the same study, 21% of stay-at-home fathers reported staying home to care for their families, which is four times more than 1989, when that number was only 5%. Second-fiddle husbands are part of our pop culture narrative, too, as seen in Sex and the City's Miranda and Steve. Miranda was a powerful lawyer and Steve worked at a bar. And the movie The Intern, in which Anne Hathaway is a successful CEO of an e-commerce startup and her husband stays at home. However, these aren't always the prettiest depictions. In both instances, the husbands cheat on the wives, and the wives blame themselves and their workaholic tendencies. Expect that trope to change with the ascent of the second fiddles. There are generally two categories of second fiddle husband marriages. The first is by choice. The husband and wife have decided, often as a key tenet of their partnership, that the wife will be the primary earner in the family. The other is by circumstance, such as a medical issue or a layoff. The couples that choose this arrangement, rather than being forced into it, are, typically, far more successful. A 2014 Money survey reported in Time magazine found that households in which women earn as much as men were just as in love and a tad happier than the average household. The survey found that 83% of the second fiddle husband households were very or extremely happy, compared to 77% for the rest, and they found that in these households, there was no shortage of romance. In fact, 51% called said that their relationships were very good or hot, compared to 43% of spouses overall. A 2012 study published by the American Sociological Association on more egalitarian marriages found that both husbands and wives in couples with more traditional housework arrangements report higher sexual frequency, suggesting these marriages are mostly win-win arrangements. The not-by-choice second-fiddle marriages don't fare nearly as well. These men are second-fiddle by default. 58% of stay-at-home fathers reported that they were actively looking for employment, as opposed to only 27% of stay-at-home mothers. It is unclear whether this is because they want to earn more or because they were looking for work so as not to feel emasculated. The same Pew Research Center's study previously cited found that 23% of these fathers polled were looking for jobs but couldn't find them. The largest percentage of stay-at-home fathers, 35%, is due to illness or disability, which is a stark contrast to the 11% of mothers who stay at home due to injury. According to Byrne and Barling, 2017, when wives out-earn their husbands, it can sometimes create something the researchers call status leakage, aka negative feelings about a husband's lower status, or even dissatisfaction with the relationship. Women more often feel negative feelings about their husband's lower status, and men more often feel emasculated when they're put in this type of partnership involuntarily. According to Luscombe, 2013, citing a Kate Ratliff paper, these types of pairings can incite competition and resentment. According to the paper, it was found that men automatically interpret a partner's success as their own failure, despite not being in competition. In Bertrand et al., 2013, it was found that there was a general aversion among those surveyed to a situation where a wife out-earns her husband. This aversion also impacts marriage formation. The wife's labor force participation, the wife's income conditional on working, marriage satisfaction, likelihood of divorce, and the division of home production. This hasn't deterred women from pursuing degrees and advanced degrees in record numbers. Among mixed education marriages, there is indeed an uptick in college-educated women marrying down. This type of marriage went from 12.8% of all new marriages in 2008 to 14.7% in 2015. The other type of mixed marriage, where the man has more education than the woman, has remained extremely steady, holding at around 8.6% of all new marriages. But during this same time, college-college marriages went from 19.9% of all new marriages to 24.5%. This is predictably a function of more people, especially women, going to college. Internationally, second-fiddle husband pairings are also on the rise. Klesment and Van Bavel, 2015, found that in an EU-wide survey, if a woman is more educated, it will increase the odds that she is the primary breadwinner. From the same study, unlike the situation 40 years ago, a wife taking a job today tends to stabilize a marriage. But when she earns more than 60% of the income, the risk of divorce rises again. In 21% of heterosexual marriages in the United Kingdom, the wife is the primary breadwinner. The percentage increased within 18 EU countries between 2006 and 2010. However, some countries with a stronger model of the male breadwinner and head of household, Italy, Greece, Austria, and Germany, are bucking the second fiddle trend. Rising female breadwinners also correspond with crises in the economy, which cause many high-earning men to lose their jobs. Countries such as Greece and Spain, hit badly by the economic crisis in 2008, saw a rise in female breadwinners. The crisis was the first in which men were laid off first and women were more likely to retain their jobs. As women become more economically powerful in the U.S. and abroad, more may simply avoid getting married and having children altogether, unless there are enough potential second-fiddle husbands to meet the demand. This is already occurring in South Korea and could escalate significantly in the U.S. In Japan, matchmakers are pairing men with poorer women because successful, educated women who would have to drop out of the workforce to stay at home are rejecting that traditional choice. While there have been a lot of policies geared to helping women stay at home, policies for second-fiddle husbands are generally weak and often the butt of jokes. Second-fiddle husband arrangements also affect economic factors like lifestyle and purchasing habits, as well as money management. According to Weiser and Renzulli, 2014, female breadwinners like to manage their money and have substantial financial literacy. Also, the more a wife earns, the greater her involvement in all aspects of the family's finances, especially the responsibilities that have traditionally been the purview of men, such as investing and retirement planning. In the future, this is apt to lead to more financially illiterate men who will need help in later years and be less able to deal with divorce, the workforce, or retirement. As there are more and more second-fiddle husbands, divorce agreements could come as quite a shock to high-wage-earning wives if they get hit with huge alimony and divorce payments. And for the first time, you could have significant numbers of men living off alimony because they were not the significant breadwinner and have few prospects of getting a good job. The second-fiddle husband trend is significant in America, but it is really having profound implications in South Korea. According to Ma, 2016, when women earn more in South Korea, they want fewer children. Whereas before, wives in South Korea were the homemakers, and their main job was to have and care for their children, as women have become a bigger part of the labor force, with more education and earning more money, they are unlikely to want to have larger numbers of children. Just as in the U.S., women in South Korea earn less than their male counterparts. However, when South Korean women have children, the gap between their earnings and those of American mothers widens substantially. American mothers earn approximately 25% less than American fathers, but South Korean mothers earn nearly 50% less than South Korean fathers. South Korea also doesn't support progressive work policies like flexible hours, which would allow South Korean women to have children and strong careers. Paid maternity leave with job protection didn't even exist in the country until 2001. Second-fiddle husband arrangements are found to be less successful in countries where the woman as caregiver model is traditionally strongest, as is the case in South Korea. All of these trends mean that South Korea could be in for a rude awakening. The key to being a successful second-fiddle husband is not letting the benefits of being number two on the earnings chart turn into resentment and loathing, but to instead to use it as a springboard to more happiness and a stronger partnership. Second-fiddle husbands may never become the majority. However, as women continue to become more educated and move up the career ladder, they will frequently be first-fiddle wives and will need their own support networks and frameworks. These first-fiddle wives will need access to childcare, investment counseling, and divorce protection. The alternative is that a lot of these women who are excelling will simply pass up on marriage and children altogether, joining the ranks of the never married. And that would be a great loss for men and women today, as well as for future generations. 2. never married. In the classic film It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart gets a chance to see what would have happened to his wife if he had never been born. To his horror, she becomes a spinster librarian, living alone. This sight is so upsetting that Stewart rethinks committing suicide, driven by the desire to save her from that most dreaded fate. Fast forward a few decades, and the trope of the old spinster cat lady is fading. If anything, it might be a new desire. The Americans that remain never married are rising in population, power, and influence. Never married no longer means a life as a loser, but may even mean life as society's newest winner. Fewer American adults are tying the knot these days, and that is drastically impacting the way we live. The group of American adults ages 35 and older who do not have a spouse is growing rapidly, and it is affecting urban living, politics, and even sales of those supersized tubes of toothpaste at Sam's Club. 13% of all American adults over 35 have never married, up 45% in just the last 5 years. If we look at the percentage of people who are 36 to 45 who have never married, that's 22% of the adult population. Unless a lot of this group marries later in life, you can expect this category to grow even faster and climb to over 30% of the adult population. The dominant vision of a typical family life with kids will be thrown into exile. The idea of a white picket fence and a house in the suburbs will be tossed out for a new ideal. It isn't the swinging bachelor that's leading this charge, it's women. They are choosing to remain single rather than tie the knot, even if this dramatically decreases the likelihood they will have kids and a family. Although, maybe we will see an increase in women having kids on their own by choice. Men, in contrast, seem to like getting married. Even Hugh Hefner, one of the creators of the bachelor archetype, kept getting married. Unmistakably, the trend toward increased never-marrieds correlates to the greater education and financial independence of women in America and elsewhere. There has also been a very sharp increase in the adults 25 and over among the black community who have never married, jumping from 9% in 1960 to 36% in 2012. The unmarried, successful career woman living by herself in America isn't necessarily a new idea. In pop culture, it goes back to the beloved Mary Tyler Moore show. Its protagonist was a single woman with a budding career as a news executive. The show was groundbreaking at the time when it debuted in 1970, won a record 29 Emmys, and featured the first single successful woman as a lead in a major television show. It would be a precursor to shows like Sex and the City, centered around the single ambitious woman in America having her choice of men. In a pivotal line from Sex and the City, character Samantha Jones sums it up perfectly when breaking up with her boyfriend. "I love you. But I love me more." This rise of the never married isn't all voluntary, however. 55% of the men and half the women want to get married, according to one Pew Research Center study. So that cuts the happily never married in half. For many, the right opportunity just never seems to occur at the right time. It was pretty clear starting in the 1970s and taking off in the 1990s, that the American household would never be the same. The percentage of stay-at-home moms who never worked would plummet, replaced by working mothers who took maternity leave and possibly a few early years off. But this was not seen at the time as leading to an overall disruption in marriage and family. Work has become more attractive, even seductive. As work became more and more driven by education and individual success, its rewards for women increased. In the past, one might well have preferred spending time at home with growing kids to low-level, repetitive work. But who wouldn't prefer traveling around the world as the representative of a large company to the stay-at-home life? The better the work, the more likely people were to value it. And so that is precisely what happened. Add the availability of contraception, the delay of marriage, the rise in pay as women took on better jobs, and the marriage-slash-no-marriage equation gradually tilted to produce the growth in never-marrieds, especially for the better educated and more prosperous. Companies big and small are fine with the shift. They like employing the never married. Fewer personal days, lower healthcare costs, and longer hours without complaints. And the never marrieds are freer to pursue the career of their dreams without the old ball and chain holding them back. So far, the never marrieds have welcomed the prospect of more work and potentially faster promotions, while not realizing that, unless they have kids, they are not getting 3 months of paid leave or time off for parent-teacher conferences. If the trend keeps up, you can imagine the never-marrieds demanding 3 month paid sabbaticals every 5 years, and maybe a bonus for the reduced healthcare expenses of one person instead of coverage afforded to families. Even tech companies like Facebook are paying for their female employees to freeze their eggs, giving them more opportunities, but also the ability to stick with the company for longer. So when you add up the money, the freedom, and the rewards in today's world that go to the never married, we're about to see an explosion of this microtrend. It's gone from an outlier to commonplace in just about a generation. To be fair, many of the never married will enter into long-term partnerships without a piece of paper. Sometimes these last for a few years. Other times, they can last for decades. Just recently, a couple I believed were married told me they live in separate homes, and I was dumbfounded at what they had done to preserve their relationship and give the appearance of being married while maintaining their independence. It turns out that once people get a home, they often just don't want to give it up. In 1990, the U.S. Census Bureau started allowing household heads to designate a member of their household as their unmarried partner. There were 3.3 million such designated partners in 1990, implying 6.6 million people living in such an arrangement. Today, more than 14 million people are cohabitating in unmarried partnerships, and the number is rising by over 250,000 each year. According to the title of an article by Matt Iglesias in Vox, living together is the new marriage, even for parents. A subgroup of never married are American adults who have children on their own. This subset is also growing quickly. Iglesias notes, births to unmarried mothers have risen sharply over the past generation, from about 21% of all births in the early 1980s to 43% during the 2009 to 2013 period. However, those relationships are unlikely to be as stable as marriages and don't come with the same rights and responsibilities. Women who go down this path find they don't have the same protections as their married counterparts do regarding child support and alimony if the relationship falls apart. Americans aren't the only ones going it alone. In South Korea, for example, 4 in 10 adults are unmarried, and single women are now being handed Plan B guidebooks on how to be single, safe, and remain happy. From 1990 to 2010, the number of unmarrieds in South Korea doubled. But in Asian countries where female fetuses were frequently aborted in favor of male children, it's the shortage of women that is fueling more involuntary singlehood among men. Even in places like the Middle East, where one might think traditional values of marriage have held firm, relationships among men and women are also being challenged. According to the latest statistics out by the General Statistics Authority, more than 5.26 million people, 3 million men and 2.26 women in Saudi Arabia, whose current population is 33 million, remain unmarried. In a country where most families marry off their daughters soon after completing their secondary education, this trend is perplexing. But with more and more women getting advanced degrees and the opening up of new career opportunities in the prosperous countries of that region, young men and women are holding off on marriage until a suitable life partner comes around. The rise of the unmarried is creating a lot of economic opportunities while disrupting others. It's been great for urban real estate agents turning out one-bedroom rentals, as well as dating sites and dating services for the more mature. The never marrieds cook less, eat out more, buy more personal services, and trend more democratic, especially if they are single parents. Yet, while there may be a lot of advantages to the permanent single life, it may not be as great in old age. Especially without kids, and someone who is pledged to be there for better or for worse. As this group ages, their safety net is likely to be a lot smaller than that of someone who has lots of kids and grandkids. The trends of modern life can be reversed. The big question is whether we believe it's better for 20 or 30% of the population to skip marriage, have fewer children, and live more for themselves. Depending upon the answer, we either need policies that deal with the later in life consequences of being a never married, or we need stronger economic and cultural incentives for marriage and family. I bet that we will see this trend peak rather than rise off the charts. The next generation coming up will seek a return to marriage, and more of the 50% of the never married that is looking will wind up settling down. Marriage is due for a comeback. 3. Open marriages. It's about as taboo a subject as we have, but more and more American couples are experimenting with open marriage. There was talk a few years back that in quiet suburbs all across America, households were placing two blue Adirondack chairs on their front lawns to signify that they were an open marriage couple. Perhaps it was just an urban legend, but there were a lot of Adirondack chairs out there. While fewer Americans are getting married, more of those who do get married are tinkering with the very core meaning of the institution. It's hard not to conclude that Bill and Hillary Clinton didn't have at least a one-way open marriage. Perhaps it was not by choice, but the stories accumulated over the years until the fact of it became apparent. There was also no question that at the same time, their relationship was deep and enduring. If this was the model of the first couple, what did it mean for the rest of the country? A la carte relationships are on the rise, and it's curious to see who's driving the trend. Once again, it's mostly millennials and some Gen Xers who married later, having become used to the variety of relationships over the 10 years of freedom and exploration they had from high school to age 29. If you're a typical suburban therapist today, this desire for more in relationships is what is driving more and more couples to see you. It is far from universal, but more American marrieds are opening their relationships up to other partners, sometimes in an entirely consensual way, sometimes as a pragmatic choice after one party or the other has strayed. Open marriages today are a lot like internet dating was a decade ago. Increasingly common, but not the kind of thing you tell the kids or your family about. Swingers have been around for a while, but this is different. These open marriages are based less on sex and more on love, creating additional meaningful relationships that are part of the marriage in some ways and that may come and go, revolving around the couple, which still serves as the core unit. Everyone has their ideas about what an open marriage means. According to sexologist Tammy Nelson, author of The New Monogamy, Redefining Your Relationship After Infidelity, the new monogamy is, boldly speaking, the recognition that, for an increasing number of couples, marital attachment involves a more fluid idea of connection to the primary partner than is true of the old monogamy. Within the new notion of monogamy, each partner assumes that the other is and will remain the main attachment, but that outside attachments of one kind or another are allowed, as long as they don't threaten the primary connection. Open marriage is notoriously difficult to track, because not a lot of couples are public about it. But there is a wide range of figures estimating that anywhere from 1.7% to 9% of married couples are in open relationships. Non-monogamy still carries a stigma, and so many couples in open marriages remain socially monogamous. In other words, appearing monogamous to everyone in their social circles. People are doing it, but don't admit to it. One place to look for the uptick in interest in open marriages is via Google, and an increased volume and use of the term by Google search engine users. In a paper from the Journal of Sex Research, using anonymous web queries from hundreds of thousands of search engine users, results show that searches for words related to polyamory and open relationships, but not swinging, have significantly increased over time, When surveyed from 2006 to 2015, more Americans want to know about open marriages, whether they agree to them or not. According to a 2016 survey of 2,000 Americans, 4% of the population surveyed have admitted to an open relationship of some sort. That's still pretty large, however. That's 80 people within the sample who openly acknowledged a relationship without certain traditional boundaries. The number of those who have considered it, discussed it, and possibly done it but won't admit it for the sake of judgment is likely higher. According to another study, more than 1 in 5 married couples reported engaging in some consensual non-monogamy during their marriage. It seems that open marriage is the perfect lifestyle for Hollywood. These couples seem to rarely stick to one partner. Perhaps they will find it more appealing as a concept than the routinely serial marriages that even the most likable and stable star seems to have as a matter of course. They are always meeting their next husband on their next film. Just declaring open relationships might be more stable for the kids they are bringing up. Hollywood usually does as Hollywood writes. For example, Frank and Claire Underwood in House of Cards have numerous partners, including one who sleeps in the White House, as they pretend to ignore it. There seems to be a rage of jealousy under the surface. The reality of everyday marriage is entirely different than what we see in the movies or what actors and actresses practice. Most marriages have a hiccup at some point. Sometimes these problems are a one-time thing and life moves on. Sometimes it's part of a pattern of problems that become more serious. That's when open marriages may be temporary band-aids instead of a true social experiment. When the husband of a delightful couple I knew in Miami asked his wife for an open marriage, she threw him out. Her notion of an open marriage was to return to dating, but without him. The numbers are dire when it comes to Americans being unfaithful in their relationships. According to national data, as much as 60% of marriages, over half of them, involve cheating. And these numbers seem to be on the rise. A study from the University of Washington's Center for the Study of Health and Risk Behaviors found that in the past 2 decades, infidelity increased by 20% among young married women, and by 45% among young married men. According to a recent New York Times Magazine cover story, open marriage may make for a happier union. The mere fact that such a mainstream publication delved into this issue means that more and more Americans are paying attention to the concept. This cover story was widely read and generated a lot of other media, podcasts, think pieces, and so on. The findings? Open marriage works for some people and doesn't work for others. But not only are we now way more likely to have this conversation with our partners, we are also acknowledging that the female libido is real. It's not just men who want open marriage, it's women too. According to the article, women's fabled low libido might be a symptom of monogamy. Despite potential positives for the open marriage debate, there is still a substantial stigma associated with not adhering to the social norms of marriage. According to a YouGov poll, 61% of Americans believe that the ideal relationship is one that is wholly monogamous, with another 18% believing that relationships should be mostly monogamous. Only 7% of respondents wanted a completely non-monogamous relationship. Humans are evolved, and their relationships need to reflect that. Dan Savage, noted sex columnist and icon, coined the term monogamish and suggests that an open marriage can be more like a door that is open some of the time and shut at other times as couples go through phases or life stages. Obviously, technology has facilitated the open marriage movement. Dates before then were pretty scarce for a mom who was busy all day and all night. Now, new people are just a swipe away. And most people in open marriages today turn to those sites first. Open marriage can also be emancipating for women who most often were dealing with philandering husbands in a one-way open marriage. Open marriage, in some sense, could create two classes of relationships. Primary relationships that last a lifetime, with secondary relationships that come and go, often with singles who are much more available. Such relationships may be good for those who are married, but for the singles in dead-end subsidiary relationships, the effects could be devastating. And the relationship could be rather poor for self-esteem. He loves me, but he loves her better, stronger, and longer. Maybe, like swinging, this idea will come and then die down and remain a smaller microtrend. Maybe a lot of couples will experiment, but decide once they have a newborn, it does not make much sense. Or maybe we will see a general deterioration of the meaning of marriage, and more people won't even get married. And when they do, they won't make it about saying, I do. The longer period of dating before marriage may be feeding this. And the general separation and independence that people maintain in their marriages nowadays may also be part of making the open marriage trend more permanent. More people have separate bedrooms, live lives that intersect only 20 minutes a day, and maintain their own professional lives. Leading their own sexual lives simply carries this trend to the next level. Personally, I expect this to be more of a fad than a trend, and that there might be an opposite reaction to this, with more people touting the value of deeper, more committed relationships. Just as we have seen divorce peak, I think the more people experiment, the more people will want the stability and security of a lasting, one-lover-at-a-time relationship. I expect the monogs to be a counter-microtrend. No matter what people say, having multiple relationships at the same time is unlikely to be the cure for our emotional voids. On the other hand, I could be wrong, and I would have been 10 years ago. 4. Graying bachelors. Perhaps you are familiar with the flurry of reality shows featuring attractive bachelors and bachelorettes competing for attention and seeking the one. The newest trend, however, doesn't exactly center on the kind of man you're picturing when you hear The Bachelor. The newest, hottest, and most in-demand bachelor is the guy in his 60s, 70s, and even 80s who is single, often from divorce, and has found renewal in later stage dating. He may have been rejected in high school, but just by making it to the finish line of life, he is in big demand. By age 64, there are only 62 unmarried men for every 100 unmarried women. Those are the best odds of a man's life. Life expectancy rates are the highest they've ever been. American females average 81 years. Males, 76 years. Men have been dying earlier than women since the 1940s. This leaves a lot of widows, and a lot of single women in their later years for fewer and fewer men. Online dating is no longer just for the young, but also for the young at heart, no matter what age. These graying bachelors now have the means to generate lots of dates, something that was almost impossible before the internet, when old age meant lots of Fox News, sports on Sunday, and warm milk. According to the U.S. National Library of Medicine National Institutes of Health, compared to non-daters, older men who go out on dates are more socially advantaged, more likely to be college educated, and have more assets, are in better health, and reported more social connectedness. There is a huge population in America today that is divorced or separated, and thus there are a lot of graying bachelors. According to AARP, 45% of Americans older than 65 are divorced, separated, or widowed. Divorce was rare before the 1970s, but the explosion in divorces starting 45 years ago has now come home to roost with the expansion of senior dating. The graying bachelor is having a lot of sex, probably more than the bachelor counterparts on the other end of the spectrum. That doesn't mean all this new hooking up isn't leading to consequences. Viagra, Cialis, and several other drugs have a lot to do with this. According to the New York Times, a number of recent surveys reported that among Americans over the age of 60, more than half of men and 40% of women are sexually active. There are several healthcare concerns for the graying bachelor, and one might be surprising: a huge climb in sexually transmitted diseases. Sure, in your 60s and 70s, you aren't thinking about pregnancy, but a lack of proper safe sex practices is leading to the resurgence of certain STDs, with the CDC reporting a significant increase in chlamydia, 52%, and syphilis, 65%, in adults ages 65 and older, and gonorrhea up by a staggering 90%. Baby boomers came of age before the AIDS crisis, and before sexually transmitted diseases were a national conversation. The New York Times article called Sex and the Single Senior cited that, according to the 2010 National Survey of Sexual Health and Behavior, among college-age Americans, condoms are used in about 40% of sexual encounters, but only in about 6% of sexual encounters among those 61 and older. A study published in the Annals of Internal Medicine showed that older men who use Viagra and similar drugs are 6 times less likely to use condoms compared with men in their 20s. Retirement communities, typically built around golf courses, today are one part country club and one part frat house. One graying bachelor I know quite well reported how he broke up with his girlfriend, and so he changed his status on JDate. Within the hour, his old girlfriend was already in touch and ready to resume their past relationship. When a graying bachelor is back on the market, it's big news. And with today's dating sites, it's news that can be quickly broadcast. New opportunities don't necessarily come with loyalty, however. The gray bachelor is also more likely to cheat on his girlfriend or spouse. From a 2008 article in The Telegraph, the British Daily, today's older men and women, many of whom came of age in the swinging 60s, are more likely to cheat and far less likely to regret it than couples in their 20s and 30s, a poll has found. Older people also define infidelity much more narrowly than the younger generation, with most over 55s saying that kissing someone who is not their partner does not constitute cheating. The graying bachelor also has more options, because as men get older, they have a more acceptable dating range of ages they're interested in, especially if they have money. It's commonplace for a man to be dating a woman 30 years his junior, but the reverse is still taboo. Women tend to stay plus or minus 5 years from their age when it comes to finding a mate. Men, on the other hand, continue to go lower and lower when it comes to their youngest allowable match. The graying bachelor, who makes over $200,000 a year, is marrying women around 10 years younger. According to a recent survey, 10.3% of men who married within this cohort found a spouse that was more than 10 years younger. President Donald Trump, of course, is in his third marriage at age 71, while Melania Trump is 47, a 24-year difference. A study from the Archives of Sexual Behavior in March of 2017 saw a decline in sexual activity in nearly all age cohorts except Americans over 70. In the most recent survey for the study, which has been conducted since 1972, millennials and Gen Xers showed a drop in the number of times they have sex per year, compared with previous years. But the baby boomers and their parents are having sex more often than their cohorts reported in the past. And the sex they're having is also better, according to the National Council on Aging. The commission reported that the elderly were more satisfied with their sex lives than they had been during their middle age years. So just when you think it's all over for you, in today's world you may be about to have the time of your life. You may need some new clothes, a new car, some great aftershave, and a dating coach to help you through it. You'll need to clean up that apartment or hire some cleaning staff. No one is going to want to come back to a dirty apartment with Chinese food containers strewn about. Or you could fly the coop entirely, as more and more seniors are doing. Popular culture is reflecting this shift toward the graying bachelor and older Americans having fun, not just sitting in rocking chairs. Seniors are also taking traveling to a new level. Grand traveling is a trendy term on the rise, but gaining popularity are senior singles cruises and tours. Some, like Silver Sea Cruises, with their own gentleman host programs for the 55-plus crowd for the extra Love Boat experience. Speaking of heading seaward across the pond, Europeans are embracing their senior living and contributing to Europe's booming silver economy. Traditionally, seniors stayed with family members, but recent studies show more retirees, specifically men, are living on their own. In Denmark, the latest trend is do-it-yourself retirement communities, where women likewise outnumber men time and again. There is one place, however, where the tables are turned upside down, China. The best thing an aging Chinese bachelor could do is move to America. Single men in China could potentially exceed the entire population of Australia in 5 years, according to the Fujian Bureau of Statistics. And aging bachelors will soon dominate the dating landscape. This is the result of the Communist Party's one-child policy that favored boys over girls. Even with the strict policy gone, it seems the Chinese still favor having boys. According to the Fujian Provincial Bureau of Statistics, there will likely be 119 boys born to every 100 girls by 2020. These bachelors might want to listen in later on in Microtrend Squared for the chapter on bots with benefits, given the odds they are facing. While the TV show Modern Family already has the older divorced guy with the younger new wife, in the coming years, the set is going to have to make room for the old single guy bringing a new date to every episode. This trend is certainly not limited to the U.S. Think of a lot of countries with aging populations. Japan, Germany, Italy, and Greece. Except where divorce is rare, these trends are likely repeating themselves and creating the same kinds of problems and joys globally. The graying bachelor is here to stay. And if your mom is living with you, check out her Match.com profile, and don't be surprised if someone is coming up the driveway or ringing the doorbell looking for her instead of your daughter. Rather than driving suavely up to your door in his Mustang convertible, he might putter by in a golf cart, sporting a rather nice bouquet of deep red roses. Such is the new life of aging single guys. 5. Third-time winners. A famous commercial that aired when I was growing up featured Americans trying to just eat a single Lay's potato chip, but their lack of willpower and the temptation of another chip always got the best of them. Marriage in those days was the ultimate arrangement meant to be tried just once, or maybe twice once divorce became no fault. But now, growing numbers of Americans are putting hope over experience and walking down the aisle a third time. Multiple marriages used to be reserved for celebrities and kooks. Now the idea that getting married over and over again to find true love, or the right love for the right decade, is more common than ever, with 9 million adults having been married 3 or more times. This trend is affecting the marriage industry, cultural norms on relationships, and the institution of marriage, and making celebrity marriage hopping seem commonplace. An average wedding in the U.S. cost $26,720, but one search on Google reveals that a divorce can be as cheap as $89 only, in 3 easy steps, 100% guaranteed. And yet even the least expensive divorce can have enormous emotional and social costs to people and their relationships, to friends and children caught in the middle. Divorce peaked in the U.S. in the 1980s, leveling off and even heading down since then. So is the development of people willing to give it a try a third time a positive development, underscoring the need for people to have for deep and lasting connection? Or has marriage become more like a disposable diaper, something to throw away once it gets messy? Today, we have fewer people married, but just as many marriages each year, as people try and try again. From 2008 to 2015, the number of serial marriage hoppers jumped from 8.6 million to 9.2 million. Put simply, by today, roughly 1 in every 19 married adults has been married 3 times. The number of Americans who've been married 3 or more times is going up every year by nearly 100,000 people, The biggest spike was in 2013, when the number of thrice-married Americans went up by 200,000. This was, perhaps not coincidentally, the year that the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey started counting same-sex marriages in their totals. It's possible that some LGBT Americans who had tried and failed at heterosexual marriage in the past were, in 2013, finally seeing their subsequent same-sex relationship get counted. Until the 1970s, divorce was uncommon. From 1940 to 1970, only 1% of couples got divorced. People may have wanted to get divorced, but it was not until the 1970s that the laws were changed to make it a simpler, fairer process. Before 1970, fault had to be proven by one spouse, proof of adultery, abandonment, abuse, addiction, etc., before couples could sign divorce papers. Even after it was proven, couples still had a long separation time before divorces were finalized. As Zsa Zsa Gabor famously quipped in 1987, "Not diamonds, but divorce lawyers are a girl's best friend." As women entered the workforce and became more financially independent, more of them also decided to be independent of their first husbands. The divorce and remarriage patterns of the rich and famous also chipped away at the sanctity of marriage. There are a lot of American actors or rock stars whose image and constant reinvention almost warrants a need for multiple spouses. When those most visible and revered are getting divorced constantly, it also affects how Americans view the process of getting married. Just a small sampling of A-list celebrities that have been married more than three times includes Kate Winslet, Tom Cruise, Kim Kardashian, Jennifer Lopez, and Nicolas Cage. Those are some of our biggest and most influential stars. People wonder, if even the most glamorous marriages tend to fall apart, why should my rather ordinary marriage survive? Our presidents have also reflected these turbulent and changing times for lasting relationships. Ronald Reagan was the first president to bring a second wife into the White House. Donald Trump is the first president to bring a third. Rather paradoxically, President Trump has record-high support among Christian evangelicals. Third marriages typically happen when people are about 50 years old. People who get divorced tend to bail at a few distinct stages. Early, when they view a first marriage as a mistake, after the 7 to 10 year itch, when marriage can seem burdensome with kids and responsibilities, and at the empty nester stage, after the kids have left the house and staying together for the kids is no longer necessary. A typical third-timer has jumped on at least two out of these three occasions. Unsurprisingly, third-timers are also more likely to marry someone else who has gone through a divorce, and that fact starts to create a new complexity in family relationships that would make the Brady Bunch look straightforward. Figuring out which kids spend which holidays with which parents might even require an app. In 2015, when the most recent American Community Survey was conducted, people who were on their third or more marriage were usually married to fellow divorcees. Think about this typical 50-year-old who has been married twice before and is now looking for a third marriage. Let's assume this person's dating pool is between the ages of 40 and 60. Among unmarried people in this age range, including those widowed and divorced, less than 20% have already been married twice or more. A plurality, 44%, have never been married. And yet, only 18% of these 50-ish twice marrieds end up tying their third knot with someone who has never been married before. Instead, the spouses of thrice married folks are more commonly on their second marriage, 45%, or, much like their new spouse, entering into their own third plus marriage, 37%. It seems people getting married a third time prefer people who have been through the experience already. There are 33 million Americans who have been married exactly twice. Of these, 22 million are still married, with another 2.9 million who are widowed. Around 8.5 million are divorced or separated again. In other words, somewhere around 26% of second marriages have ended in failure. But is the third time the charm? Of the 9.2 million people who take a third spin, 5.6 million are still married. with another 830,000 who have been widowed. Around 2.7 million are divorced or separated again, meaning that somewhere around 30% of third marriages have ended in failure. So people who have three-plus marriages are actually a little more likely than first-timers to have had those marriages fail. That does not mean giving up is the right answer, though. The difference for third marriages isn't that much. They still succeed or fail at just about the same rate as other marriages, which perhaps simply means that a third marriage is going to be just as much work, with just as much give and take, as a first or second marriage. Third marriages are likely to have less impact on kids and be more about finding security and comfort at an older age, more about making sure that someone is there for you when aging sets in. But that's not to say it can't cause tremendous strain within families, as grown-up kids may end up resenting spouses with whom they have no direct biological connection. The rise of third marriages might signal that marriage is on the rocks, but the wedding industry is booming. It's already a $70 billion a year industry. Along with booming online registry services and businesses, with Williams-Sonoma, Pottery Barn, and Target at the top, there are dozens of successful wedding-related startups, like Wedding Wire and Loverly, and the app economy for bridal-related content is seemingly never-ended. Getting married, even the third time, is a life milestone, and it is also turned into a digital experience, not the least on social media. What could gain more likes or garner more attention than an Instagram post about getting engaged? What could get you more attention and more thumbs up on Facebook than a big ring picture? Or how about walking down the aisle flanked by friends with tears in their eyes? While third-timer weddings may not be charmed, they still bring fun and excitement to family, friends, and are always a great excuse for a honeymoon. It's no longer unusual for people to go on two honeymoons in their lifetime. And millions more are blazing the trail to a third. As life expectancy pushes to 90 and 100, expect more and more to make it to their third marriages, and for more and more people to have had two and three spouses, just not at the same time. 6. Having it both ways. In the last 10 years, the American public's attitude toward the LGBT community has become far less discriminatory, culminating with a majority of the Supreme Court and of the voters in polls favoring the legalization of gay marriage, which is now the law of the land. And today there is an ongoing national debate about fair treatment for transgender people. Yet interestingly, the largest segment of the LGBT community, the B that stands for bisexual people, is still usually the least discussed, even though its size is reaching double digits among young adult women. Hollywood is way ahead of the curve in openly embracing bisexuality, with stars like Angelina Jolie, Drew Barrymore, Anne Heche, the late David Bowie, Kristen Stewart, Andy Dick, and Anna Paquin leading the charge. But, as Sex and the City actress and out bisexual in Hollywood Cynthia Nixon says, "Nobody likes the bisexuals. We get no respect." That might be why statistics show that bisexuals are often less likely to reveal themselves than gay Americans. Bisexuals are reticent to reveal their true nature, even though relatively few bisexuals report feeling discriminated against because of their sexual orientation, and even though bisexuality is hardly a new concept. Bisexuality is fairly commonplace, not just in people, but in the natural world. Snakes do it, dolphins do it, butterflies and frogs do it. Within the LGBT community, bisexuals say their sexual orientation is less important to their identity, according to studies. Still, one Pew study shows 70% of gay men and 67% of lesbians are likely to be out to their mothers, and 53% and 45% out to their fathers. In contrast, only 40% of bisexual Americans polled have told their mothers, and less than a quarter, 24%, have told their fathers. Coming out is a big deal in general, and though there is more understanding around being gay, there are still a lot of questions and doubts surrounding bisexuality, which could affect your willingness to tell family members about your identity. While much of Hollywood has no problem coming out, bisexuality in American popular culture is still underrepresented. And one could argue that bisexuality hasn't had its cultural breakthrough yet, as homosexuality did with a film like Brokeback Mountain.